Author of the Week with Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and another fantastic Imagineer and word crafter providing inspiration for the 21st century. Seeing as how we're 23 years into the 21st century, it's about time we find some inspiration.
It was a little over a year ago when last we featured that author extraordinaire, come dramatist, come general all-round fine soul, Canadian crime writer Diane Bater. Yes, of course, 22nd of April 2022 was the last time Diane was our official Author of the Week. She's back again, though, with all manner of wondrous things, and we say, obviously, those immortal words. Diane Bater, welcome to the program. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Alex. I am great. I'm just had to sequester myself in a little room, so... Hopefully, well, no interruptions.
That's okay, because obviously one of the things you've been actively involved with, as well as obviously your fantastic writing, has been some theatrical stuff. Do you want to give us some plugs and what have you been doing within your theatrical world that's kind of been part of your whole essence of the last few weeks?
Oh, absolutely. I actually run the box office for a professional theater up until the end of this month. So, and then I'm moving, which is why I'm in a little corner in my room, because it looks like a bomb went off. And, but I have been privileged to get to see many, many fantastic performances. And we were supposed to meet last week, but we had rehearsals. So there is no quiet spaces when there are rehearsals going on.
Well, if we turn the clock back just over a year, of course, we found, of course, that there you were heavily influenced by the Hardy Boys in your youth, in terms of murder mysteries and so on. And I've got to say, talking about classic murder mysteries, guilty pleasure has been G.K. Chesterton. I've rediscovered his Father Brown mysteries. I don't know, has that ever entered your oeuvre in terms of writing?
You know what? I know all about them because I actually... one of my writing friends locally was one of his relatives. So, and David Chesterton actually just passed away a couple of years ago, but I do have some of his books, so I still have to read those. But GK, for sure, I want to dig into once I get moved.
Well, exactly. I'd certainly recommend him from that point of view. So are you staying in Canada or are you moving to a different country entirely?
No, I'm staying in Canada. Currently, I'm in Southern Ontario, and I was born and raised out in Alberta, so I'm going back there to be closer to family, and I will wait and see kind of what awaits me out there, because I have lots of potential leads, I think, so...
Fantastic. Okay, let's move straight into All That Shimmers, Book 3 in the Glitter Bay Mysteries. Lakin Miller swears her new apartment above Vintage Sage is haunted. Even her English sheepdog Sammy is petrified of the things going bump in the night and day. Then she finds her ex-husband's body in the courtyard. Can she prove her innocence and find the real killer before the new police chief gives her a different kind of shimmering bracelet than she's used to? This is book three in that Glitter Bay Mysteries trilogy. Book one, of course, All That Sparkles. Book two, All That Shines. Is this the end now in terms of Lakin Miller, or is it a case of you've left the possible ending a little bit open?
The ending is definitely open. This new police chief that comes into town has created quite the stir, mostly for Lakin. So we'll see what happens with her and him. There's also a lot of potential with her sister Sage, who has had her own little adventures in sleuthing. So the next book, whenever that comes about, will feature either Sage or their sidekick, Quinn, who has been kind of taking everything over lately. They're building on an addition to the shop so that Quinn can come in and do her fashion design from the shop. So that should be a lot of fun, too.
We spoke on your first interview about your early influences being the Hardy Boys and so on. Would you ever be tempted to drop in a mystery which mixes and matches different universes, the universes of Diane Bater and conceivably the world of Lakin Miller, in which suddenly she encounters the Hardy Boys? Or is that a case? No, that'd be too much to cope with.
I never really thought of that. That's rather interesting. I do have a lot of other things on the back burner, but that wasn't one of them. So,
well, It's always a possibility. Of course, you're an author and a book coach, as well as obviously a mom, an editor, a reader, etc. From that point of view, do you find that you manage to juggle all those plates effectively, or is it a case of sometimes you go into mystery writer mode, sometimes you're in editor mode, sometimes you're in kind of book coach mode?
For the most part, I try to kind of keep them relatively separate. I mean, you cannot write a book without self-editing. It's just a thing. But I've learned to kind of turn that part off, and I still do little scratch outs and change things. But for the most part, when I'm dealing with other writers as a book coach or as an editor, I can manage to turn my own stuff off for a little while and put it to the side and deal with their project. And then I take a break from my projects. So
we also have to congratulate you because you were one of the best-selling authors for DWL Publishing in 2022. I mean, here we are almost a third of the way, we're over a third of the way through 2023. How's this year shaping up?
So far, so good, I think. So they haven't released me yet, so it must be good. And then, the new book has just come out. So I did a book launch yesterday at a local bookstore, which it was Canadian Independent Bookseller Day yesterday. So it was a cross Canada thing. So I had the honor of being the author of the day for the bookstore here, which was just fantastic. We had a lot of fun.
I'm fascinated, Diane, by your website, of course, dianebater.ca. Because I can appreciate Escape with a Writer, but 20 seconds of peace. Does this mean that actually a bit of mindfulness for 20 seconds can actually improve one's inspiration?
Sometimes you just need to stop and breathe for a half minute. Like 20 seconds for me was just, I don't know, it was just kind of a random number, but I love just doing the little video shots for 20 seconds, and you can put them on a loop, so if you need longer. But it was great when I was going, I would be up at Georgian Bay, which is Lake Huron, and just watching the waves, watching the sunset, listening to all the little critters. You can hear all the frogs and the birds and the whole bit. And it's just nice just to have that few seconds in a really busy day.
We spoke obviously about how you had that wonderful winning of the small concert of the contest when you actually entered a contest through a small publisher. You actually won that. It was a confirmation, affirmation that you could actually do it. If you could go back in time to the young Diane Bater and actually before she even picked up her pencil, pen, whatever, etc., what advice would you give her?
Just not to give up, not to let other people steer you off course. To stick with it at university and actually do the programs and stuff and not get steered into something else, but just to keep with it.
Well, let's talk Escape with a Writer. That launched in September 2018. Presumably there was a slight hiatus with respect to the COVID, or was it a case of no, it's all virtuous online. You can escape with a writer anytime.
You can escape with a writer anytime. Right now it is a blog. So I just share other authors. I actually reached out to one today, a local author that I just picked up her book yesterday. And it's the authors I reach out to personally. I send them a little interview and ask them some nosy questions. and then I share that on the blog. I also work with a PR guy who is now my PR guy. And Mickey sends me a bunch of different authors every month. And I post a lot of his authors as well. So we work very closely with Creative Edge. Well,
and indeed, we can obviously thank Mickey for arranging this connection and indeed others. So it works splendidly together. Although I noticed in terms of podcasts and radio shows, whilst I agree entirely with number 387, Diane Bater is indeed an amazing woman. I couldn't actually see whether you put last year's interview on there. Maybe you have, and we just have missed it, basically. But, you know.
It's
there. I mean, we'll you could always include it. We're just wondering where these things are actually based.
Oh, absolutely. And I might have missed it. Like, I've tried to be so good at putting them up, but especially this time of year, oh my gosh. Yeah.
Not to worry. That's okay. The other things that are actually happening. But one of the aspects about that is that clearly We live in a world of multimedia. This interview would have been inconceivable 50 years ago, arguably, insofar as, well, we would have done an interview, but it would have been via telephone. Before that, it would have been a different line entirely. So in terms of the way technology impacts, is that beneficial for the author, or is it more of a challenge?
I think it's a great benefit. Like, there is no way I would have been doing interviews from around the world just normally, right? So even, I never would have thought of this 10 years ago. So it just wasn't in my wheelhouse then. But being able to contact people from all over the place, having people able to buy your books from all over the world, like, I have a lot of sales in Australia and the UK, which is just blows my mind. So it's just really great. And I'm looking forward to eventually taking The Escape with a Writer and turning it into a podcast and reaching out in the same way and sharing other authors that way.
In terms of technology as the writer, I mean, the first technology, as indeed Walter Ong would say, would be the pen and the paper and that technology from thence. Do you ever get tempted to go back to actually use traditional pen and ink methods? I mean, some authors still prefer to have that contact with the page, the physicality from their fingers, the holding of the pen to the writing of the page, etc. They can't kind of connect with that keyboard warrior structure that you actually need. What are your thoughts? Is it a case of, no, personally, I like the quill pen or nothing else?
I've never had a quill pen. That sounds cool. no, I have always been pen and paper, especially for a rough draft. And I just find, for me, my hand can keep up better with a pen to my brain than I can on the computer, because I think much faster than I can type. So this way I can get it all out of my head onto paper and then transcribe it later. And as I transcribe, I usually edit a little bit and just fill in all the empty spots in my manuscript.
And is the age of the typewriter well and truly over? Would you ever go back to an electric typewriter or a manual with ribbon and such like?
You know what? I have a really old one, but I haven't used one since I was a kid. So everything since then has been all computer. I think it's, as a writer, it's much easier with the computer because you can change things and edit things much more easily than having to retype a whole page. And a lot of publishers don't accept paper submissions anymore. So it's just a way to keep that communication open, that you can send everything by computer.
And it's all stored in the cloud. It's very peculiar, but still, never mind.
It's creepy.
Let's talk cultural aspects of both Canada and Britain. There'll be people listening to it on podcast, and it'll still be before King Charles has had his coronation.
Oh,
I've got to ask a question from that point of view. King Charles III, I mean, clearly Canada, part of the Commonwealth. Is this something which you kind of will be concerned about? I know Australia, they're not even having a bank holiday in terms of the system from that point of view. I'm not sure what the situation is in Canada, but is this something where, from a global event, you think, okay, that's of interest? Or would you say, well, that way it may well be the last coronation we'll actually sort of encounter?
Yeah, I think it's definitely of interest, and people are kind of waiting to see what happens. But realistically, the monarchy just isn't as respected in the same way it used to be, you know. So, with all of the different movements that have come up during COVID and all of that, and then changing the names of a lot of streets, because a lot of these old names, all these old people were slave owners and that sort of thing. So that's kind of changed how everyone looks at the monarchy as well.
Well, interesting from an international perspective. Perhaps we should look forward to maybe Emperor Trudeau in years to come.
No.
Well, it's a kind of royal family after a fashion, really.
Right. He'd probably enjoy that.
Okay, let's move back to your own features and writing. We talked about, obviously, cross cultures and different universes and so on. What about the line of the channels by which the characters emerge? Because clearly, for most readers, they can consume either as a solid paperback or on a device, a Kindle or other such material. What about areas such as video games, audio adaptations, dramas, the plurality of options which are out there? I mean, it's almost a never-ending list of things that we actually get through the whole process. Any that particularly appeal to your good self? Is it a case of, actually, I've always secretly hankered after the notion of a series of audio plays featuring the Glitter Bay Mysteries?
The audiobooks are in the works. My publisher is just starting in that realm. They have been a smaller publisher until quite recently. We do have a lot of great authors with us now, though. So audiobooks will be a thing. I have had somebody actually say, "You gonna write that as a play? We'd love to see it on stage." So we'll see. I'm really keeping my options open at this point, and we'll see what comes up down the road.
Well, certainly most mystery writers, whether you're talking about the Agatha Christies, the G.K. Chestertons and others, their exposure in a variety of media. There are many people who will have watched movies, watched TV series, etc., never actually picked up a book by the author. They may be drawn into that, but I'm just fascinated in terms of how we see that being rolled out, because clearly it's the whole notion of intellectual property and so on, and presumably different adaptations as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's move on to the other side of things, which is the Diane Bater. Do you ever get any chance to relax? I mean, we've said all the things that you do, that you're always on with that point of view. But the fact that we had to juggle a number of time slots around before finally setting on this one, which is great. Do you ever sort of feel as though I need to have an organizer or PA that can actually coordinate my times?
That would be lovely. That's the one thing I love with my cell phone is I usually try to remember to put everything in it so I can make sure that I have everything planned out. Some days like today, I have like back to back to back things. And then this afternoon by about 4 o'clock, I'll be going. So I will have a couple hours on a Sunday afternoon, but things do get very busy, and especially as a writer, I find my brain is always churning, going, okay, well, what do I work on next? Or what do I have to work on next? Depends on deadlines, depends on just what's going on. Right now, it's a lot of packing to move, but you just, even when you're relaxed, you still have things going on in your brain that, oh, I have to make a note of this so I can do this later.
Writers are often told, or indeed they give the advice to budding writers about write about what you know. Are there any people that you have actually known who have maybe unwittingly or perhaps indeed consciously emerged as caricatures or characters in your book, possibly with names changed to protect the innocent?
Absolutely. My character in here, Quinn Evans, is based on someone that I met locally, and she's transgender. And she has read it. She loves Quinn. She's more than happy to know that she's a part of the series and everything. And I've actually dedicated books to her and stuff. And it was just one of those situations where, I know transgender people and everything, and she just happened to walk in, big heavy coat on, baseball cap, and I just from the voice assumed this is a man, no problem, and I asked the name, and she said Tiffany, and I just went, oh, okay, last name. But it was that heartbeat of the moment where, my brain just went in 3,000 directions all at once. And I'm like, you know what? I have to write this. And I talked to her about it, and she was great. She is everything she sends to me, she signs Love Quinn. So she has just totally adopted this persona, right? And I also have another book. One of my Gilda Wright mysteries, sorry. I had a friend of mine, I had done a draw that somebody could win a chance to be in a book. So I did have to change her name for a lot of reasons, but she was just thrilled that she's a character in my book, and I don't think I've told her yet, but she will be coming back in the next book as well, just kind of as a little cameo. So she will be thrilled with that, I know.
Very tempting to actually have a musical break with the Manfred Mann single, The Mighty Quinn, at this particular moment in time. But we could,
Absolutely.
well, let's do it.
Everybody's gonna jump for joy. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. I like to go just like the rest. I like my sugar sweet, but jumping queues and making haste just ain't my cup of meat. Beneath the trees, feeding pigeons on a limb. But when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, all the pigeons gonna run to him. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Let me do what I wanna do. I can't decide them all. Just tell me where to put them, and I'll tell you who to call. Nobody can get no sleep with someone on everyone's toes. But when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, everybody's gonna wanna doze. Come on without,
just sing a song.
Come on within.
Everybody.
You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Come on.
You're listening to Siren Radio's Author of the Week. We're featuring Diane Bater from Canada. We've been shooting the transatlantic breeze about writing, about putting things together and all manner of other things. And we've just heard the Mighty Quinn there, clearly dedicated to a transgender character that was included in one of Diane's wonderful works. What about your own musical tastes? Anything that kind of springs to mind in terms of, yeah, this is what I have on my playlist whenever I start writing? Or is it a case of I need to have lots of noises off and preferably some vacuuming to actually get things done?
It was funny. I just had this conversation yesterday that I find it easier to actually be productive if there's some kind of music, preferably with no words, because then I find I start singing along and I get distracted too easily. I know at work I play a lot of soft jazz or kind of upbeat jazz, just kind of piano, that sort of thing. And I use a lot of relaxation music when I'm writing, just something that is distracting to my brain, but not too distracting. Other than that, I have some fun playlists because I love just to dance in the kitchen. And
what's
and
currently...
sometimes that even triggers a whole thought of, oh, I got to put this in my book. So
what's currently number one in the Diane Bater playlist, then?
Oh, goodness. I haven't listened to a playlist. Well, that's not true. I have a new playlist, actually, from the theater for the show that we're doing. The cast and crew actually made a playlist. So I started listening. And it's a lot of Canadiana music. So it's a little bit of East Coast, a little bit of kind of old country type music. It's just a real variety. So It's a fun. I can send you the playlist. It's a lot of fun.
I'm just intriguing in terms of the genre that's actually there, and which one you sort of go through. So interesting. What about advice for young authors then? I mean, obviously you provide that as a book coach. What's the most challenging piece of advice you've had to give when you've sort of felt as though somebody was just not listening to you?
You have to do the homework. Like, get to know your craft. Get to know. That's my cat. I apologize if you can hear that weird noise. He's looking for me.
He wants some playlists. He wants some music.
He wants some playlists. He wants to dance. Come on. You know, learn your craft and just keep writing. Even if you find, like for me, a lot of times, I don't have hours and hours to just sit and write. I'm working full time. I'm doing a lot of other things. 15 minutes. If you can set a timer for 15 minutes, give yourself that much time and just write whatever's off the top of your head, whatever bit you want to write from a story, a book, whatever. Just write. And the more you keep writing, the more you keep practicing, the better your skills will get, the better your stories will get. And don't expect miracles from your first one, because it's never going to happen. You always have to keep working, and they will get better and better and better as you go.
So there's a lot you can accomplish in 900 seconds, basically, 15 minutes from that point of view, and just go for it. Obviously, you're in the process of a move at present. What about the convention circuit and more? You said, obviously, you did a book signing. There are crime festivals that are global. Any plans to actually travel more wildly than Canada in 2023?
I haven't just yet, just because everything has been kind of in the air. But it's funny, I was just looking this morning out in BC in Penticton. There is a, what is it called? It's a writer's festival, but it's in a winery. So I'm like, that could be a really bad thing, but
it's what really happens in British Columbia, obviously.
But it sounded very cool, and I would have a place to stay that's not far from there. So I'm like, I just might do that. That's in September sometime. I don't remember the dates, but
so that's staying within North America. Any plans to actually go to other continents?
Not just yet. Like I said, till I get moved and figure out what my next phase is going to be. Basically, I'm not going to start making kind of other continent plans at the moment, but for now it'll be a whole new group of people, a whole new group of conventions and conferences and stuff, just by being out west as opposed to being here in the east. So we'll start there.
Well, east to west is an interesting shift in so many ways.
It was interesting enough going west to east.
yeah, there we are, you see. So crossing the continent. In terms of, we've talked about influences, talked about your early fondness for the Hardy Boys and so on. What about contemporary fiction writers and so on? Which ones still are number ones on your list of people you would admire or go through? It doesn't have to be crime necessarily. It could be other genres as well.
Yeah, I have read a lot of Janet Ivanovich, Karen Slaughter. I got to be in a webinar with Karen Slaughter one time, and she is just so funny. She just kept distracting everybody. It was just fun. I do love Stephen King, especially some of the earlier stuff. And I read a lot of local stuff, a lot of new authors, a lot of people that other people haven't heard about yet, which is why I do my blog as well, is to share that.
When Netflix come knocking on your door, as I'm sure they will, and they say, we'd like to actually feature or do a whole thing on the Glitter Bay Mysteries, who would you like to have play Lake and Miller?
Oh, I hate this question. Oh, no. You know what? Honestly, I mean, I watch movies, but I am just so busy and distracted. I'm not up on all the Hollywood, you know.
You'd hand it over to the casting director and trust that they would know what we were all about.
Absolutely. You know, if I got to sit in on auditions and kind of feel them out a little bit, I'd be like, oh, okay, well, this works and this one doesn't, or, you know. But sometimes they'll just pick people and throw them in there, and the writers really don't get the option of saying, hey, no, no, no. So, you know what? We'll see. It would be very cool if that happened, for sure.
Would you ever consider writing the Diane Bater autobiography?
Very funny enough, I've been talking a lot about that lately with other people, because my adventures in moving are going to be a little bit different. I am getting rid of everything and packing up my car. Whatever fits in my car goes with me, including two cats. So right now, everybody's like, yeah, we want that story. And yeah, it's been an interesting journey. The writing journey itself has been just, I don't know. I have been very fortunate in getting to where I am with just kind of these odd little bumps in the road, but I'm gonna just keep going.
Well, I think if you're interested in that aspect of autobiographical movement and other areas, I'd also highly recommend one of our other regular crime writers. That's Jenny Finch, who is known for the Alex Hastings series. She actually shares the tale of how she traveled with her dogs and her partner from Saltburn-on-Sea, England, all the way over to Tipperary. And it regularly gets featured in Tipperary Tales, a fortnightly audio podcast series, which is on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. I shall send you the link.
Oh, I will check that out. That sounds fun.
I'm sure one day Jenny Finch and yourself could collaborate and do all sorts of things, which is almost the penultimate question. But in terms of collaboration, have you ever considered working with other writers? Have you ever sort of felt as though you wanted to share the co-authorship or something? Or was it just a case of, no, I'm going to take all the credit myself?
Yeah. I am actually working on a co-author book right now. It's a fantasy novel that a friend of mine, he's in his 60s, and he decided he wants to do a legacy book, that he wants to leave his mark on the world. And he does the kind of outline, like he'll give me his thoughts for chapter one. So then he sends me that and I have to flesh it out. And we are at, I want to say, like chapters 25 and 26 now. So it's been fun. It's a real learning curve because I've never written fantasy before. So he is the fantasy buff. So he kind of tells me what should be here, what shouldn't be here. It is a character who goes between two realms. So it's not so much the time travel. It's just he goes between these two different parts of two different dimensions, basically. So it's been a lot of fun for me just getting to work with somebody else and seeing their process and kind of nudging them along when they get stuck. And we will have that done soon. I wish I could give a timeline. I'm hoping by next summer, but we'll see.
One of the aspects of fantasy, of course, is the world building nature of fantasy, and the need to actually have some coherence in that world building. Is that something which you kind of have to pay less attention to in terms of crime writing, or is it a case of, no, you still have to be realistic in terms of your descriptions?
You still have to be realistic, for sure. Like, I mean, unless you're writing like a paranormal mystery or that sort of thing. But for regular mysteries, yeah, you don't want to bend the truth too much, because people will just go, yeah, sorry. I'm not reading that. Try and stick with things people are familiar with. Make sure you throw in those little red herrings, because if they get to the end of the book and somebody who was never even in the book or mentioned in the book is the bad guy, no, that'll be the last time they read your books. So you have to give them the clues along the way. I have a few people who have read all of my books, and every time they're like, darn it, I still didn't get it. But it was, you know, it was a legitimate character. It was a legitimate story. And they were just like, oh, shoot, you fooled me again. So
in terms of keeping in touch with you, Diane, are you a regular blogger? Is it a case of, well, follow me on the website? That's dianebater.ca. Or are there other sort of avenues? I mean, have you started? I think we might have mentioned this last time, considering the notion of TikTok as a way to make an instant impact, at least with Chinese data harvesters, shall we say.
Right. I am all over social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. I did start on TikTok, but things have been so busy. I haven't, that's one I haven't kept up, but that will be a thing going forward as I get into my travels and stuff. I think TikTok will become more of a thing. Between TikTok and Instagram, I think will be the biggest. So.
And speaking obviously of heroes to come, can you actually share the names of your cats with us? Because that's critical.
Absolutely. The noisy one is Jazz. He's actually 17 years old now, so he's getting up there. And my other kitty is Ash. And Ash is a 22-pound little bowling ball who is absolutely lovey and has a foot fetish.
There you are. Fantastic. So, ever considered actually incorporating them into your writing at all, or doing an anthropomorphical aspect of Cats Get Turned Detective?
Yeah, the thought has been there. It just hasn't happened. So,
Well, Diane, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with yourself today. It's been far too long since we last spoke, over a year, as we said. But we've still finished with those two final questions. Number one, of course, being, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the Midweek Drive today?
absolutely. It's always fun getting to do these. I love your background, by the way. I want to go dip in that lake.
Well, if you just go around to the back of Buckingham Palace, that's where you see that particular garden. So
Yeah, I'll
you
be
can
right
feel free
over.
to. It, there you go. That's. I mean, I'm sure that King Charles would be happy to open it up in the spirit of obviously the Commonwealth relations and all of those aspects. So I just go with that. And for the listener, well, radio is the theatre of the mind, as we keep on saying. So the final question, Diane, is: can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not too distant future, possibly before the end of 2023, but certainly within the next 12 months?
Definitely in the next 12 months, there will be another book coming out next spring. So right now, for this year, it's I don't have anything on the roster. I'm just working on things. So we'll see what comes up next.
In terms of that trilogy, because there are certain folk who actually say, it's all very well, we know it's a Glitter Bay Mysteries trilogy, but what if we jump in with All That Shines, or we start off with All That Shimmers? Does that matter, or would you say, no, if you're going to do the Glitter Bay Mysteries, you have to start with book one, page one, All That Sparkles?
You can jump into any one of them. They're a lot of fun, and you will probably go back to book one just so you can catch up with a couple of things that have happened. Because I don't give away all the secrets, but I make sure that if somebody does, is jumping in, that they're not completely lost. I do know a couple writers who do that, and it drives me crazy, frankly, because if I haven't read the last book in like a year, I'm not going to remember exactly what happened. So.
Well, Diane Bater, one of Canada's finest. Many thanks indeed, and keep on writing.
Thank you, Alex.
There's a road I'd like to tell you about, lives in my hometown. Lakeshore Drive, the road is called, and it'll take you up or down. From rats on up to riches, 15 minutes you can fly. Pretty blue lights along the way help you ride on by. And the blue lights shining with a heavenly grace help you ride on by. Like it anywhere I found, running south on Lakeshore Drive, getting into town, and just slipping on by on LSD, fighting that trouble bound. Then it starts up north from Hollywood, water on the driving side. Concrete mountains rearing up, throwing shadows just about five. Sometimes you can smell the green if your mind is feeling fine. There ain't no finer place to be than running Lakeshore Drive. And there's no peace of mind the place you see, riding on Lakeshore Drive.
running south on Lakeshore Drive, getting into town, just slipping on by on LSD, Friday night trouble bound. Friday night and you're looking clean, too early to start the rounds. A 10-minute ride from the Gold Coast back makes you show your pleasure bound. And it's 4 o'clock in the morning and all the people have gone away. Just you and your mind at Lakeshore Drive, and tomorrow is another day. And the sun shines fine in the morning time, tomorrow is another day. There ain't no road just like it anywhere I found. Running south on Lakeshore Drive, getting into town, and just snaking on my own LSD, finding that trouble bound.
It's a sobering thought that one in three drivers are unknowingly risking their lives on UK roads. Why? Because they might well be driving under the influence of not alcohol, but prescription drugs. And to talk us around some of the challenges with respect to this, and also ways in which the UK's leading road safety charity, I Am Road Smart, can actually provide some very important words of wisdom with respect to this particular product. We're delighted to welcome Dr. Anthony Kildare. How are you, Anthony? Are you well?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, it's good to connect with your good self, but I must admit, this is one of those aspects where presumably people who might say, no, I never drink and drive, quite rightly so, zero tolerance there. I never actually sort of have any hallucinogenic drugs. I don't drive on that basis. But prescription drugs can actually impact and adversely affect our judgment whilst driving.
Yes, indeed. I mean, the risks associated with driving while under the influence of drugs don't just apply to illicit substances, unfortunately, but also common prescription and over-the-counter medications. And these can often have just as much of a profound impact on a driver's judgment while behind the wheel. So I think it is one of these under-the-radar, not always well-known facts. But our survey, you know, that we carried out with over 2,000 motorists reveals that there are some shortcomings and people are not aware and not clear about some of the details on prescription and over-the-counter medication.
So why are so many people still getting behind the wheel when they might actually be advised certainly not to, because they might well be under the influence because of some kind of, you know, medical prescription drug that they're taking?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to ascertain why people do things. I mean, certainly our research is suggesting that many people, you know, one in four, are unlikely to avoid driving after taking over-the-counter medications like antihistamines, very topical at this time of year, or cold and flu remedies, some of which come with a warning not to operate heavy machinery. And of course, cars or heavy machinery. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes it's just that people are a bit blinded or not aware fully of the risks. I mean, I do think that in the wider context of collisions and casualties as a result of drug driving, and that's both illegal and medicinal medication, it's been increasing by over 260% in the last 10 years. You know, and if you consider that against the statistics, you know, national statistics, they reveal that the cases of driving with a specified controlled drug above a defined amount has increased year on year, nearly 28,000 convictions in 2021. And of course, the problem that we have around some of this, Alex, is that it's very difficult to differentiate the illegal substances from the prescription drugs. But certainly we're seeing rising numbers of people who are being convicted.
Now, there are clearly agendas which are often identified as making the motorist the target of all kinds of challenges, etc. Do you think that legal adherence, or indeed more laws to actually ban the use of driving whilst under the influence of prescription drugs, etc., should be brought in? Or is that, again, part of the challenge that we're faced with? And indeed, is it just a case that we should all just wait until driverless cars are online, in which case we might be perfectly safe there?
Yes, indeed. Although it may be a bit of a time off, I think. I mean, the important thing is about people firstly understanding the risks that are associated with prescription and over-the-counter medication. So I think that's a key aspect of this. And, you know, it's not about being draconian in response. You know, we as IAM RoadSmart are calling on the Department for Transport ministers and MPs and the health sector really to reform the prescribing process so that there is greater clarity and understanding from the general public of the consequences, the side effects, some of which they may not be fully aware of. So it's really raising awareness and advice on some of the potential outcomes that prescribed medications can have on motorists' ability to drive. And the other aspect, which I think is really important, is differentiating and reprioritising drug driving as a standalone issue. You know, you mentioned at the beginning in your interview about, you know, drink driving, but I think it has to recognise that drug driving, you know, whether that's prescribed or illicit medication, is a distinct issue. And it's important that that is given appropriate, you know, sort of care and attention.
Mm. I mean, certainly as we are in the season of hay fever, you mentioned antihistamines, etc. That's something I think a number of people will be unaware of, that it can actually impair your driving ability. Is it a case of raising the awareness and the campaign to actually doing interviews like this, ensure that people are aware that actually you might think you're just taking an antihistamine drug, but it's actually impacting your driving abilities?
Well, I think that's very important. And I think underpinning all of that, of course, is much of the responsibility lies ultimately with the individual to make choices and decisions in the moment. And of course, medication and prescription medication can have very many different effects on different people. So, you know, it's important that people are aware. It's important that they are checking with the experts, their GPs, and with the pharmacist or the nurse, but also that they are being quite vigilant themselves about, you know, how some of these medications are impacting on themselves. You know, are you feeling different? Is it having a different impact? You know, it can be, you know, that people feel drowsy, but also lightheaded or dizzy or different, and making sure that they're responding to some of those symptoms.
IAMRoadSmart.com, presumably the best place to go to find out further information about how the organisation is addressing this issue.
Yes, please.
For the moment then, Anthony Kildare, CEO at IAM RoadSmart, huge thanks. And dare I say it, continue to drive safely.
You too. Thanks very much indeed, Alex. Bye-bye.
Gonna tell you when it's too late. Who's gonna tell you things aren't so great? You can't go on thinking nothing. Who's gonna drive you home tonight? Who's gonna pick you up when you fall?
something's wrong.
Little job.